This is Hiram, Chelsea fan, and make sure you guys press record at this time, you idiots. You're watching the DU football show.
Good note.
He had a bad day.
they did press record. He had a really good midweek, and then the weekend, no so good.
It's not going well so far.
Yeah. Yet somehow you realize they have backdoored their way into the fucking top 10.
I know.
It's the league is that fucking bad this year at spots.
Or that good, because it's fun to watch.
We got deducted 8 points, and we're still out of the relegation. Let's start the show.
Born in the land of Bowie, Maryland. Bred to be a fan of fucking Everton. Punch you in the eye, and drink your rye. Sam Houston.
Sam Houston?
Arsenal fans have another Sam. The fucking Gooner Graham, smell of my lord, looks great in shorts, Sam Graham, hey.
Sam Graham.
Fucking United! Fucking United!
Hello and welcome to the DU Football Show, a completely biased recap of the English Premier League as told by two common American schmucks. I am your host, Sam Houston, and across the way from me, my co-host, the man running on fumes, Mr. Samuel Graham. How we doing?
I'm running on adrenaline and coffee.
And coffee. Very good. Real quick, I didn't get to say this last week because we didn't do a live stream and everything. So this one is directed directly at our good friend Shorebilly, who I know is on the show. I'm going to show him here. See little Mr. Short Arms there? See that? See that? He was man of the match in your fucking game, jackasses. Running around your little T-Rex costumes and shit. He was fucking man of the goddamn match.
Mel.
Yeah, passing out beers and everything, you know? And of course, on the ones and twos, producer Mel, how are you doing?
I can still see. I did not look directly into the sun.
Oh, very good. So nobody died. Everything's okay?
Well, I did drive with my eclipse glasses on, and apparently that's not cool.
Okay, well, you know, there's a joke about you being a woman and driving that probably shouldn't be said, but I'll just go ahead and say it anyways. Sam, myself, for work in the wine and spirit industry, and oh, no, we are recording at the DU Public House just nice. Outside the nation's capital. Even a pro makes a mistake every once in a while.
Look at that.
You can
male
check
ego.
Us out wherever you get your podcast, and, of course, streaming every single Monday night wherever you get your streaming services, and should you want to chat with us, there's many ways that you can. Mr. Graham, tell the good people how they can get in touch.
Sure. It is at bluebirddrivingschool.com. it's at DU Football Show on all the social medias, and DUFootballShow@gmail.com to get in touch by
very,
email.
Very good. And you know what, Graham? The beauty is, you see, I make a mistake, stays in the show, right? We all make mistakes. Oh, except for one person who makes mistakes, and they magically disappear. Look at her, just pretending. No, she doesn't bring up the mute button now. She's playing dumb, right?
Yeah,
And that's exactly how that works. Sam, myself, put work in the wine and spirit industry, and both have a deep passion and love for all things distilled spirits. So, as the red-blooded Americans we are, we vow to have a drink in our hand throughout this show and every single show. That's right. Still got it, baby. I can get right back in and keep that bus going. Mr. Graham, we are on number three. Tell us about tonight's whiskey.
You're a regular Sandra Bullock. It's a speed reference for all you younger listeners.
Oh, there we go. Hey, everybody, Mr. Graham making it's movie
a,
references.
It's a boomer now. At least I feel like it.
Okay, boomer.
Yeah. All right, this is number three. We have officially hit the top three now. This is the Westland Garjana, number eight. It is 100 proof, should run around 150. Panel rated at 94. It's an American single malt. And Julia Higgins provides you your blurb from the Whiskey Advocate. And this is what she had to say. Westland's Garjana series explores... Oh, why'd they have to do this? Quercus Garjana, an oak species native to the Pacific Northwest and its influence on whiskey flavor. This is Seattle, Washington-based Westland's eighth Garjana release, and it just keeps getting more graceful. The oak influence is exquisite, coaxing out notes of charcoal grill... The metal part or the charcoal part?
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't really specify. Krispy Kreme donut. Free plug.
Uh-huh.
Come on. Honey Nut Cheerios. God damn, this lady got paid off like crazy.
Sorry, Russ.
Honey Nut Cheerios and a touch of salinity on the nose. A beautifully textured palate melds smoke and sweetness in superb fashion, expressing strawberry jam, burnt sugar, campfire smoke, and chocolate raspberry Ghirardelli square.
Ghirardelli, another one.
What the fuck is happening right now? I'm reading a commercial out.
Maybe I do need some more whiskey because I didn't get that.
Yeah. Toast and marshmallow. Honey and cinnamon sweetness linger on and on throughout the finish, leaving you eager for another sip of Coca-Cola. It's like she did say that part.
Yeah, well, I smelling my glass, I do specifically get Ghirardelli.
Let's not do it over the board, honey. We are having a problem with the dropsies. So let's... That's why I set it on the mat to the side of the board.
I mean, I get a bit of some of those things on the nose, I guess. The burnt sugar especially. It's almost creme brulee-like. And then with like some sort of roast.
Mm.
Like a roasted something.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about Garryana Oak because we actually work with Garryana Oak too. We do have some juice that's sitting.
Hold on. Call it by its proper name. Garryana Oak, brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not bought and sold by the advertisers. Thank you. But we can be. We can.
Yeah, I got hate for pay. I got a price.
Yep. The but with a Garryana Oak, very, very big, very bold flavors. If you were drinking me on this blind, I would swear I was fucking with an Isla. I would really think this is an Isla. Not so much a peat, but it's got that big, big smoke to it. Very rich, full body whiskey. That is for damn sure. Interesting thing about a Garryana Oak tree.
It's almost like a mesquite rather than a peat.
Yeah.
Because I'm not getting any of the Band-Aid. I'm not getting any of citrus zest or any of that kind of stuff that you normally would get from an Isla.
Yeah.
It's more of a barbecue, like a hickory smoke or a mesquite smoke.
Yeah, but it's still, it drinks kind of what Isla I get. Like yeah. I said, on a blind, I would say it was an Isla. Now, the interesting thing about a Garryana Oak tree, shout out to my boy Jonathan Harris, who handles education and collaboration with Westward. He was telling me a little bit about the oak this week. That tree can only be harvested to make a barrel when it has hit the deck.
Are they protected?
You cannot cut that tree down.
Are they protected? Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
So it has to hit the deck.
Oh, it's the hippy dippy northwest of
Oh, you got damn right it is. Sorry, Russ. Just that's the only way to agree with you is drop the old GD there. Because I needed to say it emphatically. You see, Graham? I'm impressed. It's a big, rich whiskey. It's not normally one that I would go for,
yep.
But I get why it is where it is.
I get why it exists. It is quite good. It's not one that I would pick up necessarily. And I'm, can I be the first to say, I'm not a fan of the packaging.
Yeah, little.
It's just like a red stripe.
Yeah, little off, little confusing. But it's a good whiskey. It's not something I would go grabbing for just because it's not my style. But I know plenty of my friends who love big fuck whiskeys.
Yeah.
And they would really like
it. It definitely
whiskey.
Puts hair on your chest. And to me, after that second sip, I'm anxious to see what the ice does to it as well.
Yeah.
It almost drinks a little hotter than the proof.
It does.
Because of that smoke. It lingers. Mm-hmm. But that alcohol burn stays on your tongue for a minute. Mm-hmm. I'd probably call it 110, 115 if I had to... If I had to guess.
Yeah, I'd want this.
But it's only right at 100.
I'd want this dram on a cold day.
Yeah.
I would definitely want this dram on a cold day.
It'd be nice around a fire.
Yeah.
Some of these flavors, though, I don't know necessarily would go with a cigar very well.
I tend to agree.
It's almost like I said, to me, it's like a barbecue-y smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't play with smoking.
Yeah. Also, more importantly, too, with this whiskey.
In case y'all couldn't figure out what I was doing there.
With this whiskey and with my whiskey from last year, that's now two American single malts to break the top five. That's two craft whiskeys to break the top five. Well, Barrel also is a craft whiskey. So starting to break into the top five, smaller whiskeys are starting to get recognized, like really recognized.
Yeah,
a good thing in that regards, even though honestly it is direct competition to me. it's only a good thing that we keep seeing our whiskeys get higher and higher and higher ratings.
Yeah, and that that makes the government pay attention. Are they 100% single malt also? They don't blend anything else in?
Yeah, they're 100% single malt as well, like I say. And so for me, I can...
Quickly. For those of you that don't know, American single malt's not a legal category, so if they wanted to blend in some other grain, they could.
Yeah,
so, technically, and still call it that because the government doesn't say they can't.
Like a certain brand that... we aren't fans of that has recently come out with a single malt, and it's not 100% malted barley, and it's not made by them because they don't make any of their juice.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I wonder who that is.
Uh-huh. Starts with a B, ends with an R. Nothing I'm saying there. Nothing. Nothing to notice. Nothing at all. What else do we got to do, Mr. Graham?
Always remember to drink responsibly, and please pay attention to a word from our sponsors.
Yeah. Oh, that was a pretty decent
better.
One.
That was better. I'd say it ain't that.
Ooh, not bad at all. It's actually a good round all the way around, you know?
The football show brought to you by Cunt.
I resent that.
Resemble or resent?
Oh, damn.
Wait.
The bottom of the table saw something we haven't seen in a while. Wins.
Yeah.
Well... not for everyone. Luton Town 2, Bournemouth 1, Tottenham 3, Nottingham Forest 1, Everton 1, Burnley 0. Cherries hit the post twice and completely dominate in the first half.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, as we're passing out notes here.
This is weird.
Yeah?
I need those back. These got cut off for some reason.
There you go.
A little paper jam there.
There you go. Figure out what you need. You'll
be
all
right. Very strange. Here we go. All right, I got it.
Okay, hey. Hey, Graham,
leave me back in.
Cherries hit the post twice and completely dominate in the first half, but can't score.
Yes. That happened actually a couple of times this weekend to a fair few teams, first half was fairly impotent.
Yeah.
And the rest of the game turned out a little bit better for them.
Yeah.
A little bit better for them. In this case, it obviously didn't because Luton stormed back and played very, very well, obviously with the roar of their own fans behind them.
I would say it did feel like it was going to be Marcus Tavernier that was going to score.
Tavernier,
especially considering he hit the post twice in the first half.
There was another, that's another theme of the weekend too, is hitting the fucking woodwork. I feel like every game had either a clipped crossbar or a post hit in it this weekend as well. And this game was no exception. Like you said, one player hit the post twice.
Yep, and finally scored, and it was a hell of a goal. And you're like, the minute that happened, it was like, the switch turned on for Luton.
Yep.
And the Cherries had a couple more chances, and they couldn't take advantage of them. Mm-mm. And you just know you don't put Luton away.
Well, Kaminsky played very well also, the goalkeeper. Right, he stood on his head a bit.
But the minute you don't put Luton away, they're going to come back.
Yeah.
They're going to come back.
They've scored, and the last time they haven't scored in the league is something ridiculous like November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Minus the game against us on Thursday.
Right
was the first game since like November that they hadn't scored in, so it's been a fair while. They've been giving it an honest go. The problem is that hasn't translated to a lot of wins,
right?
So this was a massive game for them, especially because they traveled to the Etihad this coming weekend. So getting a result, especially when Forest did not, Bournemouth are pretty much out of it, but especially because Forest didn't, that's huge for them because they're still teetering right on the edge of relegation.
Brentford's draw didn't help them. They're still in it.
They're still in it a bit. But I think actually Luton are only in the relegation zone on goal difference.
Mm-hmm. That's it right now.
So they're tied with Forest on points, which is huge.
Yeah, and considering how much tougher the schedule just continues to get for Luton, this was one they had to win, and they won. And you could see it.
You could see it on Carlton Morris's face. He almost burst into tears one point.
He scored a hell of a goal.
That was a great goal. Yeah, absolutely was.
Made a very hard play look very, very simple.
Yeah.
Running through, shooking off the defender like that, and then very simply turning your foot in the air while the ball's coming from the air and just guiding it to that.
He had that movement to the left away from goal that put the defender's body weight off, and just a little nudge, just that, almost like an offensive lineman trying to get through the defensive line, just that kind of wrap. And completely in the clear. It was excellent movement by Morris for that goal.
But then still had to finish.
You got to have the composure. Yeah, absolutely. You got to have the composure. Ball's coming in at pace. It's bouncing just before it got to him, like all that kind of stuff. He made a good connection and got it in.
And then, like you said, when the whistle blew, it looked like he was about to cry. Like you could tell how much Luton really needed that match.
Oh, yeah.
And certainly for them, too. And not for nothing, the Cherries have been playing really fucking good lately. Like, really,
yeah, for real.
Really fucking good.
Absolutely.
Including being down 3-0 to that Luton team.
Yep. Like,
so you would have thought that they, you know, you could have let that get to you, and you did not let it get to you. That's for darn sure.
Yep.
Spurs get a very professional win, and it puts them back into the Champions League, which is good for them. But really, what we're kind of more talking about here is Forest. And like you had just mentioned, they are safe on only goal differential. If there's any kind of a silver lining for them, they have a forward now consistently scoring. Yeah, with Chris Wood.
Chris Wood's fourth game in a row getting a goal.
Yeah, but especially considering for how long none of them were scoring.
Yep.
To get that is, to have someone who's actually scoring goals for you is massive. So then this isn't a game you're expecting to win, but you are going to have games where you do think you can win, and you need your point man scoring goals. That's for damn sure.
100%. Murillo had himself a first 15, 20 minutes, didn't he? Almost scored from 75 yards out.
Yep.
And then had an own goal.
Oh, he did score. Problem was, wrong goal.
Yeah. Maybe this is going to be Timo Werner's secret weapon, since every time he shoots, it's off target.
Mm-hmm.
Just pass into the six. If he can hit the six, which is a much larger area than the net,
in for him.
Yeah, because this is like the second or third assist, technically, in his last two or three games.
Yeah.
And I think his second forced own goal as well.
Agreed.
So, well done,
Agreed.
Man.
One more little shout to Tottenham here as well. They're currently now in fourth, but let's not forget, in their last seven, they still have to play all of the top three.
Yep.
And two of those are on the road.
No, one.
One, okay.
Us and City have to go to Tottenham.
Got it.
But they go to Anfield.
Okay, got it. Yeah.
But no, it's absolutely fucking massive. They're going to be somehow going to be the kingmakers this season, or not. They could roll over and die in all three games. Who knows? But they very seriously could be the kingmakers this season. The other thing I wanted to spare a thought for here is how lucky Vicario was.
Mm-hmm.
Decent save. I can't remember who had the initial shot came in from, but the rebound fell right at Chris Wood's feet. Did you see how hard he struck that ball and struck that post?
Mm-hmm.
Had he got a hand to it, he dove for it.
Right.
Had he got a hand, it ended up, like I said, hitting the post. But had he dove for it, he could have dislocated his elbow. He could have dislocated his shoulder. If it hit him in the head, it might have killed him.
Broke his wrist. If,
that Chris Wood struck that. He was like, you will fucking die now. And just unleashed a strike that is ridiculous.
It was a heck of a hit.
That's, I know. And sure. I mean, I'm surprised. Honestly, I'm surprised it didn't leave a crack in the goalpost.
Yeah. All right. Well, on to Everton. And Mel, what are you doing?
Getting your shot ready.
Oh, no. Hey, Mel, we won.
Bullshit.
Yeah. Go figure. Everton has finally won in 2024.
Hey. Really?
Yeah.
For the first time since the last time they played Burnley. That was their last win in mid-December.
Yep. So. All right. Well, then yeah. Yeah, we actually won a fucking game.
Honestly, Mel, we should probably pour a shot of Malort for ourselves, because when Everton wins, we all lose.
So, Dominic Calvert-Lewin now scoring in back-to-back matches, and neither
were great.
But you know what? They count, and when you're a striker on a terrible scoreless streak, what you need is a little run and a little luck, and I can say this much. Watching him go into the second half, started kind of just missing a couple of balls, like getting in the box, getting opportunities. Had one that Murch made a real good save on. Then he had one that he cut into the box, beat three defenders, and put it wide to the left, but got a foot on it. Got, you know, it's like, it's amazing what happens when you put a couple balls in the back of the net. Suddenly that confidence starts to come back. Suddenly you start to feel like you're doing something.
That's,
you know,
it.
And, yeah, some people kind of gave a little guff about it, and it was just like, Yeah, it was a shitty goal, but it doesn't mean it doesn't jumpstart one's confidence the same.
He did mean to block the pass.
Yeah.
And that's an option. Danny Welbeck did it against Watford, remember?
Absolutely.
That might have been Aubameyang. Either way, it doesn't matter. A few years back. But that's why you press the goalkeepers for this to happen. Mm-hmm. If that ball deflected, you know, 3 feet to the left, he still would have been in prime position to react to it.
Right.
The goalkeeper's in full-on panic mode.
Yeah.
At that point, after having done that. So
absolutely.
DCL would have been in pole position to get to that ball first, also, regardless.
Not the first time he did this. The year of COVID, right before you and I went over, that game against Manchester United, the one where Gylfi Sigurdsson got called for offside.
Laying on the ground, right, yeah.
Which we'll get into another distracted goalkeeper, quote-unquote, as well. And so that happened, yeah, too. But the goal that was scored for Everton was DCL deflecting a De Gea pass because he hustles and gets in front of balls. Yeah. That's what he does, man.
That's right.
I know that one made you giggle. I will say the following. Burnley has been playing fairly well as of late. Like, they're getting points. This was Burnley's chance. If they really wanted to be in the discussion, this was their chance. And frankly, they laid a fucking egg. They did not look good.
They didn't look great. Pickford needed to make a few saves, which is how, even though DCL's pressing got them their goal, mm-hmm, Pickford still ended up man of the match, I think, in this one as well, didn't he?
No, it was DCL.
Oh, it was DCL? Yeah. Okay. What'd you tell? Oh, it was in the Newcastle game that Pickford was. Yeah, yeah, all right, never mind.
Yeah. You know, old short arms got the man of the match.
Old T-Rex.
At St. James's Park.
Did you notice that the refs seemed to be in poor positions in a lot of the game?
Yeah.
It looked like he was scurrying out of the way of the ball a lot.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, I found some of the positions he took up were strange. Like, he even followed, at one point, he followed a play into the box and then had to run out of the way as an Everton player was approaching to shoot.
Yeah.
Like, I've never seen a referee chase a play into the box. They always stop around 20 yards out because they can still see everything.
There was a few things that are
fucking weird, man,
that are worth kind of talking about. Like, the red card that was given on the foul on McNeil, it was all the way up at midfield. Yes, it was the last defender, mm-hmm, but it was all the way up at midfield.
But it was also studs up. Right. I mean, it wasn't a good tackle.
But then turn around later in the game, when Beto is straight away through on goal and it was outside the box.
That was a fucking dive.
And it was outside the box is why they didn't rate it, but he still pushed him.
It was a fucking dive.
He fucking pushed him.
It was a dive.
And then you come to also, like, James Gardner cutting across in the center of the box, gets kicked right in the shin, goes down.
What I equate the Beto one, I think they got that right, and here's why.
Okay.
Right? I equate that because the same thing that we said, now, this may dampen my argument. It probably should have been called.
Mm-hmm.
But I equate this to essentially the same thing that Anthony Gordon did a week or two ago, whatever it was, winning the two penalties against West Ham.
All right.
Because I should be allowed to run in my lane, right? You can't, if you cut across me, that's your fault, not my fault, right? He just was running straight back.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Beto had the ball at his feet.
But if I'm running straight back, you cut across me, you got in my way. It should be you obstructed me. That's what I say. That's my opinion. It's the same thing as Gordon. I feel bad for what's his name? The bloke used to play for Leeds, a brain fart. Center midfielder that gave away the first penalty kicking, and Gordon had just stuck his foot out.
Your boy, why am I now forgetting his name?
Oh my God,
I'm
almighty.
For the Phillips.
Calvin Phillips.
Thank you.
Shore Billy with the save.
Thank you, Shore Billy.
I'm just waiting for the lag to go in the chats, and I knew they'd
say he doesn't even know Gordon's there, right? I mean, he should be entitled to kick the fucking ball. That's what the game. That's the rules. Right. You know what I'm saying? So, in basketball, for instance, if you cut across me, right, as I'm running, like, I'm allowed my lane. I'm allowed to do normal activities. And I don't think that the Burnley defender took Beto out or I don't know. But
for me, I felt
because
like
the Gordon's one were called, even in that argument, I guess that one should have been called also per those rules. I just think the rules are shit.
I think it didn't get called because someone had already gotten a red card.
Had already been sent off. Yeah,
for
probably
being the last defender.
Yes,
and that shouldn't change the way you officiate.
No, of course not.
You know,
but it does.
And I'm starting to see with
how many in City Arsenal last week. How many fouls should have been cards? I counted at least six.
Right.
He kept his cards in his pocket.
So, but I also am starting to see a lot of VAR where it's like they're not even looking at certain things. Like it's just not even being looked at, or in the case of we'll talk in the next segment with the Northwest Derby, like just things aren't always being looked at. Yes, producer Mel.
There is a question in the chat.
Sure, right. Shoot.
What is the difference? This is from Christian. What is the difference between a professional foul and a cynical foul?
They're pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Well, there you go. Asked and answered.
I think a cynical foul, there's a bit more gumption to it.
Well, a cynical foul typically comes right after you didn't get a call go your way. So you then just flat out clobber someone to be like, essentially, oh, fuck you, ref. Like,
yeah.
I just got.
And fuck that player.
I just got hacked down there.
Yeah.
And okay, great. You're going to give me a yellow card. But the good news is when you hand me that yellow card, I get to stand face to face with you and tell you exactly what I fucking think.
Sure, Billy. It's like porn. You know it when you see it.
Yeah. or as I also like to say, pulling a gram. That was definitely your move.
What? Porn?
No. the cynical foul. Getting whacked up the field and then just going down the field and clobbering someone.
Yeah, somebody's going to pay for this.
Just so you can get in the ref's face and be like, you didn't call it down there.
Yeah.
It was just you. You were like, I will take the card simply to get my point across.
Oh, yeah. And on more than one occasion, I fouled somebody, helped them up and go, it's his fault.
Yeah,
and pointing at their player that hit me.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's why you're down. That's why you're on the deck. You are on the deck for me to prove a point.
But there's also, you could say if it's very blatantly like, if that pullback on Anthony Gordon again a couple of weeks ago where he was clearly passing and they just reached out and horse collared him,
mm-hmm.
That's cynical.
Yeah,
versus professional.
Yeah,
a professional they would have put him on the ground.
Kind of like you would have wrapped an arm around him and kind of both of you would have kind of fell to the ground. Yeah. It wouldn't have been
It would have been a little bit of a closer to the ball, like all that kind of. It wouldn't have been a fully. He was by me and I reached out and horse collared him.
Yeah,
there's a difference.
I clearly have to foul you. I'm not trying to hurt you. I can't let you get away with this play versus. I need to hurt somebody.
Somebody's going to pay for what just happened. Yeah,
I got to put a crack on someone. So Everton now sit 4 points. Nope, wait, just got deducted another 2 fucking points today.
Yeah, 100% they did. I did want to make mention also, I didn't watch this game for the same reason you didn't watch mine.
Right.
Was because I know you watched it and I didn't have to see it. But as I'm looking at the scores, getting ready to sit down and watch highlights and stuff and put my notes together and do things, I just wrote down Everton 1, Burnley 0. I'm sure this was a barn burner. 4 whole shots on target, and one of them wasn't even intentional per se.
Yeah.
Fuck me.
Yeah, it was not an entertaining match.
No.
So the independent commission has come out today and has docked Everton with another 2 points. Apparently in that report have also said that there is a further violation to be looked at later.
Yeah.
it's insanity.
Now it's just now it's like the police academy movies. The first 3 were funny and gave us material. Now you're just doing too much.
So when you win a game, they deduct points.
Yeah, apparently that's how it works.
So quit winning and they'll quit hitting you with fouls.
Ensure they're going on a streak.
We've discussed this at nauseam, and I don't really want to talk about anything more until we see what else happens to Leicester, if anything happens to Chelsea or City, if there's a rule change because they want to protect City and Chelsea. Who knows where this is all going? There's too much conjecture to really talk about. As an Everton supporter, this is what I know. This is now done. We know how many points we've been deducted. There's a chance there could be the appeal. Who fucking knows? But that's not until the season's over. So what Everton has to worry about right now is just all they have to worry about right now is winning the games that they have in front of them. And they play Brentford. They play Forest. and they play Sheffield in their own building. And then they play at Luton. Those are all teams around them. Win those games. Not even the Luton. You can lose the Luton game. Win those three games.
I wouldn't earmark that one.
Yeah. Win those three games, and you're fucking safe. It's that simple. So
I would say win two, draw Luton, lose to Brentford, you're still safe.
Yeah.
Is what I say. Because Brentford, with a fully fit front line, that's going to be a hard one.
Well, and now. But also, you then have next week at Chelsea, and we know they're perfectly capable to fuck it right off.
You don't happen to play Manchester United again, do you? Because that should be a guaranteed point.
And and we also know we do play Liverpool in the Merseyside Derby in our building, and that is, records are out the fucking window on that, right? We are very prone to tying them in our building on a regular basis. But what it is now, the points have been laid out. It is what it is. Worry about fucking getting the points you need. You aren't in the relegation zone right now.
After being docked 8 fucking points this season.
That says a lot about the fucking teams below you.
100%.
It was the third meeting of the Northwest Derby, and while it only had brief moments of excitement, it certainly affected the title hunt. Liverpool 2, Manchester United 2. It was clear, good old, I have it here, 2 mil, ETH, that means Erik ten Hag, was going to play defense and counter, and that was it.
Yeah, so for Arsenal and City supporters, obviously, that first half was less than ideal with the tepid, shy Manchester United performance. That was, if you want to call it a performance, I call it the first 10 minutes at homecoming freshman year is what it seems like. It's like, do we dance with them or not? Do we go talk to them? What do we do?
We're all going to sit over here and talk with our boys. And nobody's going to go talk.
Lean against the wall and drink fruit punch.
And it's going to be the little tiny nerdy kid's going to go up to like the tallest fucking girl and ask her to dance. And then we're all going to go, oh, I guess we can ask girls to dance.
Well, that's Sam walking across that divide. Okay. All right. That's how it used to go.
Heard.
But it was also kind of a sleepy performance. It was a sloppy performance in that first half for Manchester United. It almost, I compared it to a sleepy toddler wandering into their parents' room. It's just like wandering around, not really knowing what's going on, somehow not hitting their head on the door jamb. Like, you know what I mean? They managed to open the door even though they can't see.
Right. Miraculously somehow end up between the two of you.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, it was one of those things. They didn't even muster an attempt toward goal, let alone, I'm sorry, they didn't even muster an attempt towards the 18-yard box, let alone on goal.
Right, exactly.
Or near the goal, or take a shot and went out for a throw-in. Nothing. They did nothing.
Yeah.
They did absolutely fuck all. And they were very lucky that it was only 1-0 going into halftime.
Yeah.
But what a fucking finish from Luis Diaz.
Mm-hmm.
That flick on was a bit behind him, and he had to adjust and improvised, obviously, into that scissor kick, and it was absolutely fantastic, that opener. But obviously, us in City got a bit nervous. Our supporters groups were kind of sharing that moment of, fuck, what now? Mm-hmm. And then, halftime.
And here's the thing. Liverpool had all the chances in the world.
And they should have been 6-0 up.
The chances in the world. They should have been demolishing United. And next thing you know, midway through the second half, they find themselves fucking down.
Yeah. But it's all about that first goal, because that changes Liverpool's entire body language. And I really did actually feel bad for Kwanzaa, the young center back, because he's young.
Right.
It's obviously a big occasion. That's a huge derby. You know how Juventus and Inter in Italy are known as the Derby d'Italia, the Italian derby, because those are the two most successful clubs in Italy. This is essentially that for England. This is the Derby d'Inghilterra.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
if you have to say, you know, I didn't vote for Brexit, just saying.
well, you're also not an English citizen.
Well, fair. True. Republic. So they, so obviously it's a big occasion, and that big occasion got to him. He had Kelleher coming out of the goal to accept a back pass that he didn't even attempt to look at him for, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then proceeds to just pass the ball straight to Bruno Fernandes, who from his own center circle struck that very bad ball first time. And it was actually a brilliant finish. He didn't clip it too high, but it was high enough Kelleher couldn't get to it. He did slice across it, but put it far enough left that it remained on target, which is what Murillo didn't do in the Forest game, obviously, with his 75-yarder. He cut across it way too far with mm-hmm. his left foot, and it yep. curved wide. But it was just a wonderful finish. And then, obviously, that second goal, it was just turned the entire town on its head. But it was that first when you saw Liverpool's players just their shoulders dropped, their heads, oh, yeah. went, their chins went down. And now they had a couple of chances here or there. You know, the game kind of started to ebb and flow, but you could tell the wind was sucked out of Liverpool's sails at that
you
point.
You honestly started, as I was watching the end of the match, I'm like, United's going to hold on to this
I thought
shit.
They were, too. I lost 10 whole dollars yeah. betting on the correct score, 2-1. Great. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Aaron. but Kobe Mainoo with one of the goals of the season.
Yeah.
That swivel and hit, and you couldn't have held. It was like Ronaldinho against England in the World Cup that time.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't have held the ball any better in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a shame David Seaman was in goal for that, but lovely to remind myself of the ponytail flying through the air. Actually, old safe hands. But yeah, now Kobe Mainoo's goal was brilliant. And there's a big talk of him to make sure Jude Bellingham remains further forward to get him to be the one to start next to Declan Rice in the Euros for
good.
As the kind of pivot and Declan Rice be the more defensive minded player. So I don't know what they're going to do. I think he probably. On the back of some of these recent United performances, he's been their best player, hands down.
Oh, God, yes.
I think he will actually make the Euro squad,
yeah.
To be fair to him. I think he'll probably take Calvin Phillips's spot.
Yeah, don't disagree with that thought.
But, yeah, no, very well. And then, obviously, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, a little rush of blood to the head. Harvey Elliott's going nowhere, in my opinion. He's mm-hmm. actually well-poised to continue to defend him.
Yeah, you didn't need as to go he's down. Running.
He didn't need to go to ground, but he does love going to ground. And I think part of the stupidity of it is he is statistically one of the best one-on-one defenders in the league.
So Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
There's no reason to go down there. But he does regularly finish kind of near the top of slide tackle statistics. So he mm-hmm. likes going to ground and sliding in. But on this occasion, in this atmosphere with that referee, what are you doing? You're giving him a decision to make whether or not he fouled him properly. You put yourself in a position to give the ref a decision. And he did.
Interesting that VAR just immediately agreed with the decision and didn't take a look at it, because upon further review, he didn't touch him.
Meh.
He didn't touch him.
I don't know. I thought it was
now,
a pen.
I'm don't care, right, ultimately, but Liverpool been bitching and moaning, especially since that Tottenham game. They just got given a get out, because you watch the replay. The first leg is already well over top of him, over top of his lead leg, and his second leg literally jumps right over top of it. Like, he does not touch him. He doesn't touch him. It's hairline, it's close, but he don't touch him.
Yeah. All right.
Al. But
it's fine. Liverpool drop points. We're in the driver's seat again. I don't care.
Precisely.
With our goal differential, if we went out, we win the league. Yep.
And that draw finds Liverpool sitting in second place on goal differential, like you said.
Fuckers.
Get you. You're all ready to be all excited.
Gotcha, bitches.
Got too much.
I know. Got too much smoking.
Deep in the lungs.
yeah, so our game was a bit of a... are we going to ours, yeah?
No, we're about to. We got to go to Oso. That happened because that's where I put it.
That's right.
Because, I mean, hey, Mr. Graham, City and Arsenal won. That's what they're supposed to do. Or maybe Oso that happened. Rounding out the rest of the league and Oso that happened. Man City 4, Palace 2, Arsenal 3, Brighton 0, Villa 3, Brentford 3, Newcastle 1, Fulham 0, West Ham 2, Wolverhampton 1, Sheffield 2, Chelsea 2. So Palace scored the first and the last goal. Problem? City scored 4 in the middle.
Yeah. So the issue, obviously, with the first goal is they scored it way too early.
Oh, yeah.
They scored it way too early.
Gave them something to get angry about.
Nothing to make City sweat. There was nothing. When that went in, I was like, this is going to be a bloodbath. First thought was like, well, there goes Palace's chances right there. It was like, if they don't get another one in the next 12 seconds, they're fucked.
They are
and
done
they
for.
Didn't.
Nope.
Because the only better strike this weekend than Kobe Mainoo's goal was Kevin De Bruyne's opener.
Ooh, jeez.
It was the exact same thing, but a little further out.
Yep.
Fucking hell, what a strike that was. He also had another peach later from a Rodri knockdown, which was a perfect little layoff. And obviously, you know what? I did it on my right foot already. I'll do it on my left this time.
I'm doing my left this time.
But it was just, I mean, utter domination for 90% of the game, minus those two counterattacks, really.
I will say the one
to the point where Ortega did a Cruyff turn to evade one of the Palace strikers, and it came off.
Yeah.
Fuck.
The one thing that benefits you, and then we're going right into your game, is that they did score at the end, because instead of being a plus three, it's now only a plus two.
Yeah, it's huge.
And honestly, every little fucking goal now 100%. Is going to
that,
count.
That goal differential is like an extra goal, man. Oh, like an extra point, rather.
Absolutely is the case.
And that's why, like, Trossard's goal, which, you know, adding that third is huge.
Yeah.
Is another plus three.
And so with that, honestly, professional win for you guys. Like, it was exactly what you were supposed to fucking do.
So I said the same thing about the Luton game. It was a very professional win, albeit kind of sloppy, right? Because it was mostly second teamers. Mm-hmm. This is what the first team does during a professional win. It's a bit more concise, a bit more put together.
Yeah.
It was just a bit more grown up of a performance.
Well, and frankly, the building the you haven't won in a while. Well, so a 3-0 win is a good, convincing win, considering you don't win in that building.
It's a tricky game, and we caught Brighton at a good point for us. Mm-hmm. Because they've been terribly inconsistent over the last, I don't know, month and a half.
Yeah, Brighton's sliding. So. Brighton's sliding. They're just about out of the European discussion now, regrettably for them. But
yeah,
that's where they're starting to sit.
But they, you know, they played all right, actually. There was a couple of chances they had that made me a bit nervous, to be honest with you. But obviously, Saka got the opener in somewhat controversial circumstances. So the defender, I can't remember who it was, did kind of get a stud to the ball. Here's what I say about this. And as a defender, it's a little bit of a travesty. Yes, the old days are over.
Yeah, them get called now.
Those follow-throughs get called all the time, regardless of whether or not a player wins the ball.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it goes. Is it a bit of a shame? Yeah. But them's the rules now, and it benefits me, so I have a lot less sympathy for that.
My counter argument, to continue with what I've been saying, I find it very interesting that one gets really scrutinized and looked at, but the Elliott one doesn't get looked at all. Like, it just,
well,
for me, it's
because,
starting to
that's
feel,
because we're unfashionable.
Yeah.
While Jurgen Klopp is still in a position, because he's so well-liked by the media, Pep Guardiola the same, Arteta's not part of the boys' club yet. That's how it goes. We're unfairly looked at.
make whatever excuse you want there.
I'm telling you, go listen to any of the talk sports stuff. It's all when Jurgen Klopp runs down the touchline and knee slides in the center circle and does all those things, it's endearing.
I was going to say, center circle during a live game and jumps up and down joyously with his goalkeeper.
It's endearing. When Arsenal celebrate like that, oh, it's over celebration. This is just a game against Luton. It was a 4-3 thriller that we won in stoppage time.
Yeah.
Odegaard, that other game, was paying, kind of a compliment to the club photographer who's been there for 30 years and taking pictures of him for a change after a massive home win.
The win over
against
Liverpool.
But we're over celebrating. They should keep their hands to themselves. Fuck you, bro. Just enjoy it.
My thing, it's not directed at any one team. It is consistently inconsistent, completely across the league, depending on what a referee is on the VAR and what referee is not, on how long they look at something, when they look at something, if they look at it at all. You look at fouls where you go, well, that was a foul and it didn't even get looked at, or you look at like Calvert-Lewin sending off in the FA Cup where it's like, is that even a foul? But that got looked at and said it just much inconsistency here's the point. It's so much inconsistency to a device that is supposed to help make decisions made clearer, and it has only made it more and more foggier.
So the part of the problem is they are looking at things while the game's happening, because stopping the game every 15 seconds to look at something, they can't do. That being said, the announcers should do a better job of communicating, right? If it's a big decision and the ball goes out of play, they will stop the game and look at it.
Right.
But if possession's just turned over, right, or if a goal goes in and they look at offsides, nobody moves until that decision's made.
Right.
But in the instance where the ball stays in play, the referee doesn't stop the game.
Right. He's being talked to.
Right. But the announcers have to do a better job, I think, because I think those things are, some of them are being looked at, but the announcers don't tell you the, because we only know if they tell us.
But we've also had announcers. That thing
doesn't come up on the screen unless the ball's dead.
Perfect example is the Bournemouth Everton game with Tyler Adams fouling Dominic Calvert-Lewin. The color guy just went, wow, they didn't even look at it? Like, he said that aloud on air. Like, no, they didn't even look at it?
Right, but I think that happens far less than you think it does, okay, is what I'm saying.
Fair.
But that's because the announcers have to bring that to the table, and they don't. Because unless the game is stopped, that VAR thing doesn't come up on the screen.
I myself, personally, I am hearing more commentators saying, wow, they didn't look at that a lot. I hear them saying that a lot. And for me...
fair enough. Maybe I'm just not...
It's just, and it's not even like a, you know, they're out to get Everton or they're trying to make sure Liverpool wins the league or anything in that regards. For me, it is, it's so fucking inconsistent that you can't do a connect the dots and make up a conspiracy theory. It's all over the place and it's rampantly wrong a lot of times for something that is, again, supposed to make it a clearer decision, and all it's done is made it fuzzier. And the rest of the world seems to get it right, and England seems to, like,
fuck it off.
Intentionally, yeah. Fuck it off.
So I think this is the global leftist elites trying to distract from Diddy's diddling.
Sattery.
Allegedly.
Sattery. sure thing. Sure thing, Samuel Graham Jones.
Those fucking lizard people.
But, yep, Gunners find themselves now on top of the league.
Yeah, we do. And it's a lovely place to be in. I'm feeling great, feeling good, loving life, looking good. Come on.
So Villa go up 2-0. Seem to be cruising right along. Everything, no problem. We're, nothing to see here. We're ready to go. B score 3 on an insert.
I honestly, Villa, for 10 minutes, had what I like to call a Taylor Twombly. Just had a wee stroke for about 10 minutes.
Well, that would be a Taylor Thompson. Christian
didn't have the stroke. That's right.
Taylor had it.
I thought they both had one. No, it's just Taylor.
Maybe
that's right.
You just had a stroke.
Could be. I'm going all haywire and shit. Maybe I'll get good at memes now. Because for 10 minutes, it seemed like Villa just forgot how to play football for a second.
No shit.
I don't know what was going on there. And then, oh! We're actually quite good. Oh. And then remembered to pass it, just give it to Ollie.
I just hear Mel out of the office because my game's going on. I'm in the living room and she's here and there. Just, fuck! What the? Come on! Fuck! I'm just screaming at the top of her lungs of the TV.
There was a good, I don't know, 20 minutes where all we're doing is hacking it at a goal, right in front of the goal. And for some reason, they just couldn't get it in.
Yeah. It just, very, very weird, odd game. Good on the bees to show some resiliency, take the lead. Unfortunately,
Christian, unfortunately, by the way, I've had everything but a stroke.
All right, fair enough. That's my fault.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you got to ask that special someone in your life to, you know, give you that stroke.
More on injury time. And now a word from Dorito Spicy Nacho. So what I thought about this, and this is where you said earlier, Brentford being the, like, in at home at Goodison, you need to worry about this. The Mbeumo, those first few games back from injury, hasn't looked very good.
Mm-hmm.
His goal was the best of the lot for me in those three for Brentford. The way that he started his run, the ball was played in kind of a fucked up way behind him. He adjusted, kept his eyes on it, and was able to pull this wonderfully improvised volley out of his locker, almost Willie Mays-esque, you know, over the shoulder kind of thing. I think you need to worry.
Alex,
because that front three is what Brentford's been missing all season, mm-hmm. and now it looks like they're firing on all cylinders. Now their defense is still a bit all over the place, and
which is what helped Everton beat them the first time right. was they just kind of sat back and
but
countered.
Your defense hasn't exactly been very good either.
I'd like to remind you again, the fifth lowest goals in the league, and also second in the league in fucking shutouts. They have given up some shitty goals over the past couple of weeks, but I completely have to fight that argument that you're telling me Everton is a bad defense when statistically they are not.
All right.
It just that debt you have to be called on.
Yeah, but it feels like it.
Yeah, the league table doesn't lie.
Yeah, because Sam's feelings tell you everything
just
you need to know.
About the eye test.
Right, right. And you know what their problem is? Is they can't fucking score goals. That they have the only team that has scored less goals than them is Sheffield. That's why they're at the bottom. And the 8 points that, by the way, if we were going to be real petty, since you're going to be petty, if we're going to be real petty, the Premier League wanted them docked a total of 17 points between their two violations. That was their recommendation to the independent
I don't think they should
council.
Be allowed to make a recommendation.
Yeah, that was
that's
their recommendation.
Too. That's not very independent, is it?
No.
But anyway, back to Villa. I thought Villa showed great resiliency. What did you think?
We didn't lose.
Though? Right.
It was a very frustrating game. We should have played better. It was nice to see... Oh, was it Rodgers?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, new kid get a goal. Mm-hmm. I always like seeing the new kids get a goal. I like the confusion of the Spider-Man meme between Bailey and Watkins.
Oh, the first goal.
Did you
who
score?
Scored?
Did I score? Did he score?
It
Do
was,
we
it
care?
Was almost like Konza's. They were talking about same thing from that cross that he totally meant to do shot thing.
And I was feeling pretty cocky at halftime. I thought this was going to be an easy game, and Brentford bought back. And I'm glad that. Not drinking this tonight.
Yeah, no Malort Monday. How about that? And the other key thing, too, is they may be outside of the Champions League spot now, but the run towards
Again,
the end of the
right,
season
for Spurs is rough.
You know, they, you know, in Villa has a couple of tough ones. They got to play
us this weekend.
They got to play at Arsenal, and then they get Liverpool
at home.
We don't
have Douglas Luiz. Let's talk about that fucked up shit.
That's a huge
thing. 2 minutes left. 7 minutes added on the clock. I think there's really only less than 2 minutes. I don't...
It was a stupid mistake, and he knew what he did. He knew exactly. He knew what he did. He hit his face, you know.
Oh, and did, how did he get through that entire game?
He knew exactly what he did too. As soon as the referee blew his whistle, he went, "Oh no!"
And if he made it through, if he had made it through that game, everything washed.
Well, right, but the 10th yellow.
Yep,
he's now suspended 2 games.
Oh, it's not one. It's
no,
two.
It's two. That includes us and the following game.
Yeah, we're going to find out just how valuable Douglas Luiz is to us.
We'll be able to score from a corner again.
We haven't played without him. Like he's been the consistent
except
our whole season.
Except when he got that fifth card and you played without him once.
So that's then essentially 5 out of 6 games that they would have been without McGinn or Douglas Luiz, which is tough.
Hey, but we got Guinea back.
Fulham completely dominates, and it's funny, the higher ranked team, the team with a better chance of Europe in Newcastle, got the smash and grab.
Yeah, because Newcastle have 4 people that play for them now, and that's it. they were hurting. It was Bruno Guimarães obviously late on, but Fulham dominated the game from start to pretty much finish.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Gordon, I think, had a chance or two kind of sporadically throughout. Isak had a chance or two sporadically throughout, but it was, I think Newcastle ended up with more shots on target, but I never felt like they were dangerous at all.
Right.
I think it was very close. I think it was 5-4 shots on target, but it was a very great response for Fulham in terms of the game, considering what happened the game prior, obviously. But Muniz, who was on fucking fire, seems like the goals have dried up a bit. I mean, I think he himself had 5 or 6 shots, none of which ended up on frame in this game. And there were chances fucking galore. Dubravka made a couple of very smart saves. And the defense, you know, got in the way of a lot of stuff. And then there was a touch of Fulham being wasteful as well.
So got 2 shout outs. I'll give one here and then I'll give one after West Ham and Wolves. But the one here is to our boy Jay, who said, man of the match goes to Dubravka for faking an injury when there's a team full of injured players to get that get the game over the line for him.
Yeah, 100%. In terms of the smash and grab, right? In England, it was commonly referred to as a stripey jumper job, right? So the stripey jumper being the jailhouse costume.
Right.
Uniform costume. Mel, you infiltrated my brain with your activities off mic. Newcastle already have the fucking stripes, man. It's easy. Yep. That's easy.
Yeah, exactly.
They're fit for jail. They're right in.
Wolves take the early lead on West Ham. And what I found very surprising about that first half was I know that West Ham likes to play a defensive style, but you go down early, you're in the hunt for a European spot, and there really didn't seem to be much kind of impetus to West Ham in the first half. They were just like, okay, I mean, we'll eventually score. And I mean, they did, you know. I mean,
it was, so West Ham had like two chances, I think, total in the opening, like 20, 25 minutes or whatever it was. It was pretty much a very good start by Wolves, honestly.
Yeah.
Pablo Sarabia was just not getting on the end of things, really. And Fabianski, I thought, had a pretty good game. I know Smokey likes to call him Flapianski. You know, he is a bit older and kind of past it, but I thought he's been deputizing fairly well you know, over the last couple of seasons. But yeah, ultimately West Ham get back in the game. So, I mean, it's helped by
allow me to say the following to you, Sam. Not sure if you're aware of this. James Ward-Prowse, kind of good at set pieces.
Very good at set pieces.
Yeah, I mean, he might be good at them. Might be.
He was aided by the wind in this one. Yeah. I'm going to put on my best Jurgen Klopp impression. I mean, it looked like he meant it, and he essentially said that he meant it. I don't know if you heard his post-match, but he said, yeah, goalkeepers hate when you try that. Insinuating that he meant to put it on frame. But the way the ball flew in the air, it kind of looked like the wind.
It was windy like crazy. People love when I talk about the wind, but it was windy, and it's not good for football. And so we had really to work hard.
Yeah. Kind of windy. Not good for football.
Also, but two perfect penalties.
Oh, yeah.
Sarabia's penalty was brilliant. Kissed off the post. And then, obviously, Paqueta did not send Sa the wrong way, but hit it with enough panache that it got past him. But I don't know if anybody noticed. No look pen.
Really?
He hit it with his left foot to the right, from his angle, hit it with his left foot to the right side while looking left.
Holy shit.
It was a no look pen.
Wow.
Something only an overly arrogant Brazilian could pull off. I love it. It's fucking brilliant. He's like, oh, okay, you Spanish twat, you put it off the post. Gotcha. I'm not even going to look at this, and I'm going to put it past your keeper.
See, I almost thought we had the title of the show.
This is why we won five, and you've won two.
So I first thought
one.
I really thought the first title of the show could be Derby Day Anglata, you know. But now, what was that? An overly confident Brazilian.
An overly confident Brazilian. Yeah.
I
think I said overly arrogant.
Yeah. Overly arrogant Brazilian. Those are two great show titles right there, my friend.
No look pen.
And then, of course, it comes down to the end. It looks like Wolves have tied it up, but nope. Offsides for distracting the keeper and being involved in the play.
He wasn't a sight line. That's true. That has been given multiple times over the last couple seasons. You can't really argue with it.
Yeah.
If you the angle that kills it for me is the one from behind the goal.
Yeah.
And you can see Fabianski and his body weight is already going the other way.
Yeah.
There's no way he's getting to that anyway.
Right.
Even if he was in his pump.
Yeah.
There's no way he's getting to that ball regardless. Yeah,
he was already reading it wrong.
Correct. So I get it. I understand. At that point, it's a bit of a subjective decision whether or not he's really interfering with play, since the ball wasn't played at him, to him. He didn't go for the ball. There's none of that stuff. It's whether or not he thinks that it affected the goalkeeper and his movement.
Yeah. Didn't look like it did.
Not to me.
Yeah. Didn't look
but
like
I
it did.
I can understand why it was given. It's just annoying, and it's a tough one because it was also Max Kilman's redemption after he thought he was Jose Sa for a brief moment.
Yeah, no shit.
And reached out and stopped that cross.
Yep. Yeah.
From Emerson.
Mm-hmm.
And what a weird. This happened a couple times in a few games this weekend, like for Mario, for Forrest. This became the Emerson show for about 6 minutes.
Yeah.
He had a couple of really good and scary things happen all at once, and right. then he ends up from left back on the right side crossing that ball in for Kelman, who handled the ball, obviously, and won the Paqueta penalty.
Right.
Just like, where did he come all of a sudden?
What the hell
fuck's
is he doing
going
there?
On right now?
So the second shout-out to someone that mentioned something interesting would be to Shorebilly, talking about how this league is now kind of broken down into little quadrants, right? You obviously have the top three fighting. You have about four or five at the bottom fighting for survival. You have obviously the two teams in Villa and Spurs fighting for that last Champions League spot. Sixth, seventh, and eighth is only divided by 2 points now between Newcastle, West Ham, and Manchester United. It is also on a nice fucking edge because one of those teams ain't going to Europe.
Well,
and that's a massive... So for West Ham, it's probably not killer because they already work on a thin budget already, but that money would be nice. But in the case of United or Newcastle, especially Newcastle, detrimental if you're not in Europe next year.
But remember, this is the first year of that Champions League change.
Right.
So it is entirely possible, I was listening to this the other day, that like the top eight or nine can all qualify for Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on who wins what cups, wins what competitions, right. and all that kind of stuff. The top eight or nine teams in England could all be in Europe at the same time if the right set of circumstances happens.
Right. If City or Arsenal.
Essentially, half of the fucking league could be in Europe.
If City or Arsenal win, and then if Liverpool or West Ham win Europa, if it ends up being two teams from England winning both of those, that could
Correct.
Happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Which is what happened last year.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, that rule wasn't in place.
Correct.
Now, finally. Chelsea just seemed to not be able to get out of their own fucking way, man.
It's really funny. But I think this was more a symptom of a young Chelsea team looking past an opponent, honestly.
Yeah.
Sheffield in front of their own crowd, more than they did last time under Wilder,
mm-hmm.
are showing a bit of fight before they inevitably go down anyway. And this was no exception. Now, obviously, playing right to the final whistle because Ollie McBurnie got that goal maybe 90 seconds before.
Right at the fucking death.
Injury time was supposed to be over.
Yep.
But Madueke with a fantastic strike as well for Chelsea. I think there's some positives to take for Chelsea, but ultimately, you got to look at it and go, it's the worst team in the league. This squad costs £16 billion. What are we doing here?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and it should just be better, and it's just not, man. It's gonna take time. I don't know that all the players are good enough, and they way overspent for everybody. It's a strange old thing Chelsea's got going on, man. And I don't really know what they're gonna do.
And somehow, much like United being frauds, Chelsea's somehow in the top 10. I mean, do I need to start calling them?
But aren't they 10th?
Do I need to start calling them frauds too?
Nah, they're comfortably where they're supposed to be.
Sure money.
All right.
That was a big sigh.
Yeah, so we didn't do any bets on Thursday, obviously, so I'm going to tell you where I'm at now. I am now down $1,747 after losing my bet on Monday of last week. So, Sam, over to you. Here's the Big Sam bet of the week brought to you by... What's the spray for your taint?
Gold bond.
Gold bond.
It tingles.
Taylor bond. Arsenal won, but Spurs didn't, so I am now down $318.
Big Sam's lock of the week.
Graham, I'm glad you're sitting. Are you ready for this? 25% of the time, it works 100% of the time, baby.
What? Holy shit.
25% of the time.
Fuck, a quarter
it works. It works 100% of the time. No decimal or anything, just exactly 25%. I'm going to take Brighton to beat Burnley and over 2.5 total goals at plus 162.
Okay.
Yeah. Planet safe. I think there's three goals there.
Planet safe.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm actually in the lead, and I'd like to finish in the black this season.
Nice.
And now, it's time for our degenerate gambling friend, Pat's Pick of the Week.
Brought to you by Pinnacle. Dear gambling, I know we've been together for quite some time, but my feelings towards you have changed. In the last month, I've begun to go on a horrible losing streak, and my addiction has reached new lows.
Oh, no.
I blame you for losing, and I've decided that something has to change. I'm leaving you because I just can't seem to win with you around. Gambling and winning is more important than gambling and losing. P.S. I provided one last losing bet to remember me by. I'm taking Manchester United over Bournemouth at plus 150. Brilliant.
Oh, one last bet. Is that it for Patty?
And it was titled Losing Hurts.
Everybody hurts.
No shit. You don't say.
I think it's
that?
More like nobody knows.
75% of the time.
The trouble I've seen.
You're giving it to me too early. I like to get right. folded. So. Mm-hmm. They know I'm not cheating.
Oh, okay. By the way, I gave it to her right when she hit the button one time. She was like, well, why are you giving it to me that fucking late? What the hell? How do you explain
it? I never
like,
did that.
Oh, I will go back and fucking, you know I will go back. I have sound checked everything and I know exactly what you did and when you did it.
It's an only child thing. Don't call him on his bluff. Anyway, can we not stomp all over my part?
Sure.
Oh, sorry. Sam's bet.
This is what everybody thinks is entertaining because it sucks.
Not good gambling.
Every single time. Brentford over Sheffield United. Brighton over Burnley. Manchester United or draw with Bournemouth on a double chance. And Liverpool to beat Palace.
Nine-way parlay.
And Arsenal to beat Villa. That's only five, I think.
Six because it was
three,
draw, win.
Four, five.
Double chance.
No, double chance is a singular bet.
Okay, very good.
So one bet.
+556
Get it the fuck together, Sam.
I'm hoping this one actually does and I come
through. Not good gambling.
So just one bet.
Yeah. It's one parlay, yes. What's that mean?
Thank you. All right.
What is going on here?
Nothing.
I don't like this.
Give him the card.
What is
I don't
it?
Remember where I put
it's
it.
It's underneath the mat right there. No, underneath that mat.
There you go.
It's blank. I, Sam Houston, bet producer Mel $1 that Graham will make two separate bets tonight because he's a petty little bitch. Why would I do that?
Exactly.
Because we didn't do one last week.
I should have. I was going to actually bring... I had a whole thing written.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Since I've been up since 4 a.m.
Does yeah. not count.
I'm fucking Does tired too, but I still wrote a bet today.
Yeah, exactly.
Does not count, Houston. Yeah. Him thinking about it and doing it, two different things.
I know.
He respects the
system.
Because I'm also exhausted and I still did my job.
You know who always...
I didn't shit on his segments.
You know who always says their job? The chicken.
The chicken. Well, Kitty hit Arsenal and she sits at 17-13. So this week I gave Kitty Brentford hosting Sheffield.
Mm.
Now, Kitty showed me a video of her, Mick Foley, and her good friend Jane Ferrari in Philly. Ringside at WrestleMania this weekend.
Wow, how about that?
Now we
wonder if they were there for both nights.
We all know that Jane is a huge Brentford supporter and Mick loves Sheffield, so it looks like Kitty is picking a draw between the Bees and Dublins.
Yeah, sounds about
Mick
it.
Mick Foley.
Yeah, Mick
it's
Foley.
Sheffield.
Yeah, he's
makes
Sheffield.
Total sense. I can't think of more of a match made in heaven, honestly.
Do you know what is also a match made in heaven?
What's that?
Remembering to gamble illegally and responsibly.
Very good.
You're welcome.
I just was like, that's super All easy right. right there.
That is going to wrap
underhanded.
It. That is going to wrap it up. Mr. Graham, any parting words?
Yeah, so there's a couple things I became aware of, and then one very sad thing. There is a professional Peruvian footballer whose name is a tribute, it would seem, to someone that no one likes.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Osama bin Laden, V-I-N.
Jesus.
He's He's got a brother named Saddam Hussein. Legitimately.
Jesus.
What the fuck?
They're Peruvian. I have no idea. But I became aware of this last week. And it's, despite all the obvious negative emotions and shit that, you know, our country has been through as a result of those two cunts.
Right.
It is quite funny. Because he got asked about his name, and Osama bin Laden said something to the effect of, "Well, I ain't kill nobody. Just because, you know, I know a guy in Peru named Hitler."
Fucking Peruvians.
And that's a legit interview he gave. And he was like, yeah, you know, I mean, he was a bad guy, but, you know, this guy I know in Peru's not. Kind of thing. It was quite funny.
Oh, South America. By the way, Mick, according to Smokey, Mick is a Sheffield because he, a lad there once, did the Mixer Sacco celebration.
Nice.
And now Charbelli is questioning whether it was Sunderland and not Sheffield.
Yeah. It was, it is definitely Sheffield, because remember,
Kitty the Chicken does not fuck up.
One of the few things that we actually learned from our good friend Nick, the Blade supporter, not necessarily, is that one of their players, one time scored a goal, and he pulled the sock out from his jock strap and did sock out.
It is also entirely possible Nick was wrong.
I'd err on the side of caution with that story.
How crusty was that sock?
If you ask him again, he actually put it in the goalkeeper's mouth, too.
I looked it up to confirm that story.
Was it Ollie McBurney that did it?
No, it was...
Because he seems like the type.
No. It was while they were still down in the championship.
Could have been a John Egan thing, too. All right.
And what else you got for us there?
So the sad part, the bad thing, is we should spare a thought, everyone, for Joe Kinnear. Mm-hmm. Was the Newcastle, most of us in our Premier League experience would know him from Newcastle United and managing them, but he was the longtime manager at Wimbledon and longtime Spurs player, actually quite good Spurs player. He was actually there the last time they won a trophy, which I heard was in black and white on the telly.
Hey, we anyway, wouldn't want anybody to leave our closed group.
But anyway, now Joe Kinnear lost a battle with dementia this week. He was 77, I think, but just a proper football man. A good guy all around and generally loved in the game, legitimately. And, you know, an infectious kind of love for... It's almost like Neil Warnock, just kind of an infectious love for football in general.
Mm-hmm.
Was great of putting arm around a player and getting the best out of him. And, you know, managed Wimbledon in the Premier League, obviously, and then took over Newcastle United after someone was sacked. I don't remember which time, and handled them for the rest of that particular season. But just an all-around good guy, lost his battle with dementia, and that sucks.
Yeah.
Really bad. So, you know, condolences, obviously, to his family from us here at the DU Football Show, and hope everybody has a chance to watch some old highlights from back in the Spurs days, if they still have that, you know, that motion picture real, because it was a long time ago.
All right, well,
I do also briefly have a cunt of the week, if I could indulge myself. It's the people that have a problem with stopping games for Muslim players to eat something.
I believe he's calling out a Spurs fan right now.
It's a little absurd. These people are obviously well in shape and everything else, and it takes fuel to run a body. Some of us are fueled by booze and hatred.
Others, weed and beer.
Others, weed and cider.
Mm-hmm. Cider, thank you.
Beer actually brings you to a screeching halt now. But these athletes need calories, and the sun's going down, and the ball went out of play. So if a Muslim player needs to run over, get a drink of water, and shove a banana in his mouth, what are you worried about?
Yeah.
They've been fasting all day. Football is supposed to be tolerant and inclusive. It's football is supposed to be for everybody. So whether it be, you know, touching other boys or needing to break your fast, yeah, I think we should just leave people alone and let them do what they fucking want and need to do. Why is that so hard?
It's a 2-minute break for snack and water. Get over yourselves and respect that.
Yeah. The sun's going down. Like, that's the moment. Now, I agree. If someone's on a fast break, up, sun's down, shh, no. Ball goes, but that hasn't happened, has right. it?
Ball goes out of play.
Ball goes out of play, bang. Or if we have like a 3-minute stretch, 4-minute stretch where the ball doesn't go out of play, but the goalkeeper's just diddling around his box with it,
mm-hmm.
he blew the whistle then. Yeah. No problem.
Yeah.
No problem with that whatsoever.
Right.
It's not a goal scoring opportunity. It's not a fast break. It's not a, you know, anything.
Right.
It just that these they haven't eaten since 6 o'clock that morning before the sun came up.
Yeah. Let them put put a little bit of nutrition.
You
in their
try
system.
Being a professional athlete and not being able to drink water.
Right. Right. Not even water. Fuck. Remember that. Yeah.
They've been put through their paces all day. A walkthrough in the morning, I'm mm-hmm. sure. A lot of these teams do a walk around the neighborhood surrounding the stadium. As kind of a light warm-up, then their warm-up, mm-hmm. then like all of these various things, you know, Jack Grealish, I'm sure, not that he's being insensitive, he's just an idiot, is I'm sure sitting away munching on a banana in the locker room. Do you think that dude's not hungry?
Yeah,
precisely. Whoever's sitting next to him, you know what I mean? So just stop being cunts about it. Just, it's fine. Yep. It's fine. It's an orange slice at halftime at your white baby's soccer game. Just leave it alone.
Yep.
Don't worry about it.
That's going to go ahead and wrap it up, boys and girls. Next up is DU Does the EFL, where we're going to catch up on the rest of English football. And, of course, following that will be injury time, where we're going to preview the weekend's action, talk about fantasy, and talk about how the beers that we've been drinking. Mr. Graham, should somebody want to find injury time, how do they go about doing that?
It's very easy. It's patreon.com/DUFootballShow. Sign up to that $1 tier. You get all the very cool extra content he just talked about. But remember, as he said, the EFL show is free, and it's coming up next. And there is another very funny story from the championship that I found.
Excellent. I look forward to hearing it.
QPR and their mascot, which is, for some reason, a cat.
Love it. Very good. Till next week, everybody.
Good night.
Born in the land of Bowie, Maryland. Bred to be a fan of fucking Everton. Punch you in the eye and drink your rye. Sam Houston.
Sam Houston.
Arsenal fans have another Sam. Right, AA, the fucking Gooner Graham. Smells of a lord. Look straight in shorts. Sam Grammy.
Sam Graham.
Brooklyn United. It's a fucking new button!